So this is the class for September 25th, which is a Friday, and we're going to discuss today proof by contradiction. Aristotelian logic dictates that every sensible statement has a truth value, true or false. If we could demonstrate that a statement A could not possibly be false, then it must be true. On the other hand, if we could demonstrate that A could not possibly be true, then it must be false. We're going to begin with a very dramatic example of this principle. This example has great historical significance. Namely, the ancient Greeks really believed in their heart of hearts that all numbers were rational. And that's because mathematics in ancient times grew out of land management issues. And, you know, when you're measuring land, of course, you do everything in terms of rational numbers. You know, and they were... doing elementary quotients, and that gave rise to more rational numbers. And so it was quite a shock when Pythagoras and his people discovered that there is no rational number x with the property that x squared equals 2. In other words, the square root of 2 is irrational. So we're going to prove that. So in symbols, our assertion may be written as, it's not true that there is this x, so that x is in Q and x squared equals 2. Here, Q, of course, is the rational numbers. So seeking a contradiction, we assume the statement to be false. Then what we are assuming is that there does exist a rational number whose square is 2. Call that number x. Since x is rational, we may write x equals p over q, where p and q are integers. And we may as well reduce the fraction p over q so that the numerator and denominator have no common factors. In other words, we assume that the fraction p over q that represents x is in what we call lowest terms. Now, our hypothesis is that x squared is 2. Therefore, the quantity p over q quantity squared is 2. Multiplying this out, we get p squared equals 2q squared. Notice that this equation asserts that p squared is an even number, but then p also must be an even number. Because if p were odd, then p squared would be odd. So p is even. Therefore, p equals 2r for some natural number r. Substituting this assertion into the last equation, we have, well, what we had before was p squared equals 2q squared. Now we have 2r quantity squared equals 2q squared. Therefore, 2 times r squared equals q squared. So now we see that q squared is even, and therefore q is even. We have proven that p is even, and we've proved that q is even. But that means that they have a common factor of 2, and this contradicts our starting hypothesis that p and q had no common factors. In other words, our fraction x equals p over q was in lowest terms. So we've derived a contradiction from the hypothesis that x equals p over q, and therefore x could not equal p over q, and therefore x could not be rational. It must be irrational. So that's really quite dramatic, and it's kind of an exciting proof. So what it all boils down to is that we cannot allow a statement of the form C equals A and not A. In the present context, the statement A is X equals P over Q in lowest terms. For such a statement must be false. If X exists as a rational number, then the statement C is true. No statement such as A can have two truth values. In other words, the statement C must be false. The only possible conclusion is that X does not exist. That's what we wish to establish. In practice, we do not include the last three paragraphs in a proof by contradiction. We provide them now just because this is our first exposure to a proof by contradiction. We want to make sure the reasoning is absolutely clear. The point is that the assertions A and not A cannot both be true. An assumption that leads to this eventuality cannot be valid. That is the essence of proof by contradiction. Later on, when we learn about Cantor's theory of cardinality, we're going to learn that most real numbers are irrational. We don't know that yet, but it turns out to be true. It turns out the rational numbers are a rather small and thin subset of the reals, and the irrationals are most of the reals. But that's something to look forward to later. Here's a second example of a proof by contradiction. This is the theorem of Dirichlet, which, when Dirichlet invented it, was called the Dirichlet-Schubfach-Schluss. Dirichlet was German, and that means Dirichlet's drawer cut shutting principle. But over time and over change of culture, the name that we use is the pigeonhole principle. And of course, most people don't collect pigeons anymore, but Anyway, that's what we call it. So here's what the theorem says. It says, suppose that n plus 1 pieces of mail are delivered to n mailboxes, then some mailbox contains at least 2 pieces of mail. Here's the proof. And there are many different ways to prove this result, by the way, but I'm trying to illustrate proof by contradiction. So that's how we're going to do it. Seeking a contradiction, we suppose that the assertion is false. Then each mailbox contains either 0 or 1 pieces of mail. But then the total amount of mail in all the mailboxes cannot exceed 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus dot 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 plus 1 n times for the n mailboxes. In other words, there are at most n pieces of mail. But that conclusion contradicts the fact that there are in fact n plus 1 pieces of mail. We conclude, therefore, that some mailbox contains at least 2 pieces of mail. And that's the proof of the pigeonhole principle. Okay, here's another example. Draw the unit interval I on the real line. Now pick 11 points at random from that. So the interval I is the interval 0, 1, left endpoint 0, right point 1, with the endpoints included. Now imagine picking 11 points at random from that interval. You could do this by throwing darts at the interval or by dropping ink drops on the interval, or however you like. Then some pair of points has distance not greater than 0.1 inch apart. To see this, write I equals 0, 0.1 union 0.1, 0.2 union dot, 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 union 0.8, 0.9 union 0.9, 1. Here we have used standard interval notation. We've broken up the unit interval 0, 1 into 10 equal subintervals, each of length 1/10. So think of each of these subintervals as a mailbox. We are delivering 11 letters, that is, the 11 randomly selected points, to these 10 mailboxes. By the pigeonhole principle, some mailbox must receive 2 letters, and therefore one of those intervals of length 1/10 contains 2 points. So there are 2 points that are distanced not more than 1.1 apart. And that's the proof. And now here's another result of great historical interest. I'm sure you've heard of Euclid's Elements. This is the book that was written about 2,500 years ago by Euclid and his school. And it's most famous for the geometry that he enunciated, but it also contains other parts of mathematics that were known at the time, including number theory. Incidentally, Euclid's Elements has been through more editions than any other book in history. More than 1,000 editions. Anyway, this assertion we're going to prove right now is an elementary statement from number theory, which is that there are infinitely many prime numbers. So first recall what a prime number is. A prime number is a positive integer greater than 1 which has no divisors except for 1 in itself. The first several primes are 2, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13, 17, 19, 23, 29, 31. Each of these numbers can only be divided by 1 and itself. A natural number which is not prime is called composite. A composite number will have non-trivial factors. For example, 18 is 2 times 3 times 3. But 7, for example, is just 7 times 1, and that's all you can do. So, in particular, a composite number will always be divisible by a smaller prime, like 18 is 2 times 3 times 3. But a prime number is only divisible by itself. Now, seeking a contradiction, let's suppose there are only finitely many primes. Call them P1 through P2, P3 through PK. Define capital P to be P1 times P2 times P3 dot 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 times PK plus 1. What can we say about this number capital P? If we divide capital P by P1, then P1 goes evenly into the product and there's a remainder of 1. If we divide capital P by P2, then P2 goes evenly into the product, and there is a remainder of 1. And so it goes for the rest of the PJs. Now, capital P is either prime or composite, but we just checked that every known prime, P1 through PK, and verified that none of them is a divisor of P. So P does not have any divisors. P cannot be composite. P must be prime. So we assumed in advance that there were only finitely many primes, P1, P2, P3 through PK, and we produced a new one, capital P, and that's a contradiction. So that proves that there are infinitely many primes. So for the next example, we will show that there are no positive integer solutions to the equation x squared minus y squared equals 1. Such an equation, a polynomial equation for which we seek integer solutions, is called a Diophantine equation in honor of the ancient Greek mathematician Diophantus, who lived at about 250 years after Christ. So seeking a contradiction, we suppose that our Diophantine equation does have integer solutions x and y. We write 1 equals x squared minus y squared equals x minus y times x plus y. Thus, either both x minus y and x plus y equal 1, or x minus y and x plus y equal minus 1. In the first case, we can add the two equations to solve them and find that x equals 1 and y equals 0. This contradicts the assumption that both x and y are positive. In the second case, we can add the two equations and find that x equals minus 1 and y equals 0. And again, this contradicts the assumption that x and y are positive. Either case leads to a contradiction, and we conclude, therefore, that the Diophantine equation cannot have a solution. So the final example will show that the sum of a rational number and an irrational number is always irrational. Seeking a contradiction, we assume the contrary. So let q be a rational number and alpha an irrational number, such that q plus alpha is rational. So there is a rational number p, so that q plus alpha equals p. But then we have alpha equals p minus q. And surely the difference of two rational numbers, p and q, is also rational, as you know from your experience. So we have an irrational number equal a rational number, and that is a contradiction. That, my friends, is the end of today's lesson. I will see you next time.